Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Rado Palamariu, Managing Director of Elkett Global.
Delighted to have with us today Michael Hansen, who is the CEO of Hempel. Now, Hempel is a global supplier of coatings and paints in the protective, marine, decorative, container and yacht industries, a company that's been around for many, many years. To be very specific, I think 108, so quite a lot of legacy and history. Michael has spent large number of years from his career with Maersk, actually, on the shipping, transportation, maritime, logistics side, and has been now with Hempel for close to 6 years, having transitioned roles and now as CEO. So, Michael, pleasure to have you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Robert.
So, first, I'd like to ask the question about inflection points in your career. If you were to think back, what were some of the moments that really shaped who you are and where you are today?
Yeah, I think there are particularly two, if you allow me. One is leaving Maersk, and the other one is joining Maersk. So if I put some words to that, I was 19 years with Maersk, partly in Copenhagen, partly in Spain, New Zealand, and Mexico, and had a fabulous journey there, learned a lot. So really an accelerated journey of international learnings with expatriations back in Copenhagen, expatriation again. But leaving Maersk after 19 years is probably the biggest inflection point in my career, in the sense that it required a lot of courage. And it also, now in hindsight, I can say, put me on a journey of even more accelerated learning than I was already on. Because there's no doubt about the changing industry, as I did, from transport and logistics into a production company, producing, developing, selling paint and coating solutions around the world, was a far bigger change than I had anticipated. So when I look back at my career, these two moments stands out, leaving Maersk and putting myself on a completely new trajectory, but equally joining Maersk at the age of 22, and you know, gaining international experience and exposure.
Love it. And staying a little bit on this topic of changing industries, because not only, you have changed industries, and it's not a small change. Because, okay, it's one thing to go to from Maersk to a different logistics company, you went to a production manufacturing company. Second, and perhaps equally, if not more exciting, was the fact that you got then promoted to CEO of Hempel. Yeah? So you started as executive vice president and head of sales, and now you are the CEO. So what was some of the, if you were to look back, some of the secrets of success or ingredients that made this possible?
No, but I think all the learning, all the experience that I had gained over 19 years with Maersk was essentially what I took with me into Hempel as well. But what I had underestimated was the level of change, where I probably thought that the skills that I had was more transferable than they actually turned out to be. That's not to say that there's not a lot of things that I learned with Maersk that I could transfer, for sure. And you could say my leadership, the way that I drive, the performance management, and you know, development of our colleagues is certainly a skill set that I took with me from my previous employer. However, getting into a new industry, understanding our products, understanding the chemistry behind our solutions, understanding the needs of our customers was a far bigger journey. And it took me maybe a year, year and a half at least, just to be comfortable in this industry. And I have acknowledged and still do that there are people in our company and this industry who understands it far better than I would ever get to. But I think the secret sauce to answer that question has been taking the learnings, taking the tools, all the experience that I had with me, and then couple that with a high degree of humbleness and curiosity, and really immersing myself into this industry, into these customers, and making sure that I understood the context I was in. I made plenty of mistakes on that journey because it took me a long time to fully understand the industry and fully understand our customers. And during that process, you make mistakes. You make mistakes all the time. Some of them you don't even understand that you've made in the course of making them. So it's just to say that the secret sauce, when I reflect on it, is really being open-minded and being curious and interested in understanding the full value chain of that new company, from sourcing raw materials, developing new formulations, creating these products, to marketing them into our customers and addressing their needs. So that's a learning journey that I have been on, and in some way, a learning journey that I'm still on.
Yes, there's a side of me, and I feel the need to add this nuance. There is that famous quote that's been circulating the internet that you don't hire for skills, you hire for attitude. And I never quite agreed with it, in a sense that yes and no. I mean, you know, you probably don't want to be operated on by a doctor who has a great attitude and never went to medicine, right, school. I mean, it's not, yes, sure. I mean, I would probably pick attitude any day over somebody that's an expert with toxic behavior. But let's not underestimate the importance of skills and experience as well. So that fine balance is, yeah.
Yeah, no, but I think you're absolutely right, and you said it better than I do. It is essentially coupling these two, where you have your experiences, your skills, your functional expertise, if you wish, and then you add that open attitude that I described before, that humbleness of wanting to learn a new industry and wanting to learn from far more experienced colleagues. If you add those two components together, I think you can develop a successful career also in a new industry.
Mm. Now on Hempel, and looking a little bit, you know, it's been quite a year. Likelihood is 2024 will be equally challenging. What are some, from where you sit as the CEO of the company, what are some of the top priorities that you're focused on for the next 12 to 24 months?
Maybe just allow me to describe a little bit what we do, because one third of our business is our maritime business. So that's essentially marine coatings, and it could be for all kinds of ships. It's also for small private yachts, but it's predominantly for container ship, tankers and bulkers and the like, with an aim to improve the bunker consumption and thereby also reducing the CO2 emission from these vessels. So that's about 800 million of our total portfolio of 2.4 billion euros. The next chunk is what we call protective coatings. And protective coatings, it could be a wind turbine, it could be an oil and gas installation, it could be a football stadium, it could be a metro station. It's essentially about coating steel structures with an aim to extend the lifetime of steel. So that sounds fancy, but essentially it means, let's take a wind turbine. The value of extending the wind turbine from, let's say, 25 years to 35 years is immense for the operators and for the OEMs as well. So that's where we're working with our customers to really extend the lifetime of steel, acknowledging that steel production and steel usage is one of the biggest emitters of CO2 today. So if we can be a part of a more sustainable future by extending the lifetime of steel, it's incredibly important in, you could say, the global sustainability challenge. So that's the second chapter. The third chapter of our business is a consumer business. It's essentially stores around the world where you or I would go in, buy paint that we apply as DIY or even do it for me in our houses. So that's in Australia, New Zealand, it's in Germany, it's in the UK, it's in the US. But it's a little bit less known about Hempel that we also have one third of our business that is a consumer business. And I'm just making this brief introduction because it's not one size fits all when I'm replying to your question, you know, what am I looking at? Because it's a portfolio business where the maritime business, the marine business is going really, really well. And so why is that the case? Because we are a part of, you could say, that ecosystem that is driving a more sustainable future for what we normally call a hard-to-abate industry. The bunker consumption and thereby the CO2 emission from the world fleet is a very significant emitter in the world today. So our vision, our dream, is to be a part of reducing the bunker consumption and thereby the CO2 emission from vessels around the world. In doing so, we can have a really positive impact on the decarbonization. We do that by coating ships, by solutions where the ships cut through water in a more seamless way, and thereby reduce the required, you could say, bunker consumption. That's going really well. I think the initiatives done by the IMO have been really helpful. The introduction of CII, EEXI, so essentially putting common standards across global trade, global ships, is incredibly helpful, and maybe even something to follow in other industries as well, because now we have a global framework where all of the players, whoever we are in this ecosystem, can play towards a common objective of decarbonizing shipping. So that's really important and going really well, and with close collaboration with our customers, also on continuously developing new and even better technologies. Then the other end of the scale, I was talking about our consumer business. That's a little bit more hard work, if I'm honest. No surprise, you could say, because during COVID, everybody was at home and a lot of families took the opportunity to, you know, do-it-yourself work at their homes. So we had record-breaking revenues, record-breaking profits for our decorative business during that period. But of course, there's only so much time, so many times you have to paint your house. So we also have to acknowledge that these days, that market is a little bit more sluggish. So that's a little bit the two extremes in the Hempel business. What is common for all of our businesses that sustainability drives whatever we do as we move forward.
And wanting to bring, and you mentioned, and I liked the way that you mentioned value chain, I think it, at some point of the discussion, because beyond supply chain, it's even broader. It's also bringing that element of clients into the discussion. A lot of our audience comes from, you know, from different aspects of end-to-end operations, supply chain, value chain. You, as being the CEO, when you look at Hempel operations, value chain, also perhaps putting this lens of sustainability, or what would be your expectations of your operations teams to help you achieve what you've set up to achieve as a business?
So when I define operations in a Hempel context, I'm all the way back to our R&D centers around the world, where we develop the new formulations for our coating technologies, to sourcing raw materials, to distributing out to our production sites, producing and subsequently distributing out to our customers. So it's a really broad value chain that we have in operations. But what is true for all of that is that the challenges are about finding new and even more sustainable solutions. Sustainable through the lens of, you can say, scope 1 and 2, but also scope 3, meaning that the first of all, we need to have our own operation more sustainable, reduce our carbon emission in-house. That's point number one. That's our license to operate. And we're doing that around the world, reviewing where can we source green electricity to our plants, where can we have more sustainable raw materials sourced into our factories, into our production, and so on. But it's also about scope 3. So it's working with our customers in the other end and saying, how can we deliver more sustainable solutions to our customers and thereby being a part of their success in reducing their carbon emission? So it's a new world. It's a new world for all of our operations colleagues, because it's no longer just about just in time or just about procuring at the lowest and the cheapest level. And so it's about procuring the right raw materials. It's about developing the right formulations for more sustainable coatings. And it's about understanding the needs of the customer that's also on a decarbonization journey. So I think what I experience as new with all of our colleagues across operation is that it's like putting new glasses on, where we're used to just having cost glasses on. We still need to have that lens, but we need to have a synthesis where cost and decarbonization goes hand in hand. And I think that's new, still new for all of us. And it's a different way of looking through our supply chain. So when we look at our inventories, you know, you need to look at it in a different way. Of course, we all talk about the move from just in time to just in case. Okay, I get it. But it's also about, you know, having the right raw materials at the right time through the lens of decarbonization. So So I want to marry these two elements, cost and decarbonization, where cost has clearly been the overriding theme in the past. That is still a license to operate, but the license to win comes through the lens of sustainability.
This metaphor actually reminds me of me going to the lens shop last weekend with my daughter. When you go to the to buy lenses, you know, you get the lenses and the frame, yeah? And then obviously once you say, okay, I like this, then they ask you, okay, so the price is whatever, $100 for the lens and the frame. Do you also want UV block? Like, what is well, you can put something in the lens that adds another layer in the lens, and then do you also want them to be change colors for the sun? I forget now the name of that. So that's a third layer. So it's a little bit like that, that supply chain indeed has, and the jobs of supply chain professionals have become more complex because you need to add a couple of layers. Now, I do want to bounce a little bit with you and have an open sharing on this element of cost versus, it doesn't have to be cost versus, right? But cost first, then sustainability as a second lens. What my impression is, during COVID, a lot, we heard the resilience on every single article, and it was all about resilience. Listen, start of this year, it's all about, most discussions are about cost, right? It seems to be going a little bit back to where we were before COVID. So that's where I wanted to ask you, because you as a CEO, and you mentioned, right, license to operate. I mean, it cannot be that, because the client ultimately will not pay a lot more for a sustainable solution. I mean, in fairness, ideally, you should have the same solution, more sustainable. That's their ideal. So I just wanted to, let me stop for a second. I can't formulate necessarily a question, but maybe this prompts something from your experience or your reality to share.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of important points that you're making here. First of all, corporate history have a tendency to be very short, or corporate memory, I should maybe say, right? So we act upon what we see today with a very nearsighted view. So we have a cost challenge today, and then we double down on that, as opposed to thinking about that more agile or that more resilient supply chain that we looked at a year ago, simplifying it. But I think there is a reality in what you're saying, that we as leaders, and particularly in my case as a CEO, that we need to remind ourselves, you know, what is it we build and why is it we build our supply chains and our inventories and all of that the way we did, and then build on that, make it more robust, make it more cost competitive and so, but not tear down the house we built yesterday to build a new house tomorrow. There is a degree of binary thinking. Now we double down on cost. Now we double down on sustainability. The complexity that you talked about before, the multiple lenses, is our reality. But that's also our opportunity, because with a higher degree of complexity in the solutions we can create, in the value chains that we are a part of, that's also a commercial opportunity, because that's how we create even more value for our customers. That's how we make more integrated relationships, partnership with our customers. And that's how we defend our position also as a key supplier with our customers. So yes, there's more complexity. And yes, we need to remind ourselves of yesterday's agenda is also relevant today, even though there's something new. But embrace the complexity, because it can be translated into a strength in a, you could say, a differentiator in front of our customers.
Love that that entrepreneurial and commercial approach. And now to ask you, if you had a magic wand, so not to put it in the negative, but in this kind of wishful thinking, if you had this magic wand that would fix or give you access, visibility, or knowledge to a certain thing that you don't currently have across your value chain, what would that be?
I think if I had a magic wand, it would to significantly increase our digital competences across our business. It's in our leadership team, it's with our senior leaders, it's down through the ranks. I think one of the biggest risks for our business today, and I'm going to say even for our industry, because I don't think Kimball is unique within paint and coating, is that we are digitally miles behind other industries. And that concerns me. So when we start talking about AI today in the world, I think we are still struggling with far more basic questions about how can we automate our order intake? How can we make better visibility around our transactions and all kinds of things which other industries have solved decades ago? So if we are also to be cost competitive, relevant, and also driving our sustainability agenda 5, 10, 15 years from now, we need to go on an accelerated journey in terms of our digital savviness and our digital adoption as a company, as an industry. And I think it becomes a real threat for us because, you know, are there other technologies out there that can come and disrupt us? Are there other new companies, scale-ups or otherwise, that will come in and substitute our role in our customer supply chain? So I am concerned on a personal level and on a company level how we can accelerate our digital savviness and application.
And now flipping, because I'm also aware that that you've made some changes also structurally in terms of your organization. I think you have a, I don't remember the exact head of digital. What are some of the steps that you have taken on this journey of accelerating the digital side of Hempel?
No, you're absolutely right. So one of the first calls that I made coming into this role was that I untangled our digital department, you could say our digital competences, from our finance department, where it was sitting in the past, and I elevated it up to our executive board because I found there was a real need in having that voice in the executive team where we needed to make digital and digital solutions a far bigger part of our conversations as well. And that doesn't happen if digital is not represented at the table and are sitting as a subdivision within finance. That you could probably live with, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. You certainly can't do that in 2023. But it's just a structural, a blunt tool to do that. It's a necessity, but we still have a long way to go in having a far better language around our digital competences and how we develop digital solutions to our customers, better integration of digital into everything that we do. So yeah, first step of the journey done, but that was the easy part. Now there's a lot of work ahead of us, which is really about learning and acknowledging that this is also about improving our own personal competences and not just delegating it to an IT department or someone like that. I, as the CEO and all of the executive board, need to immerse ourselves in technologies as well to be far more competent than we are today.
Absolutely. And I was just over lunch today, I was sharing with a different executive. And this is also something that I do appreciate about Hempel, and I think it's your strength. We were talking a little bit how a lot of companies in this world change strategy way too often. Anyways, not naming names, but, you know, let's say that one CEO stays there for 3 years, and in those 3 years, maybe splits or tries to split the business into two concrete cases. I'm not going to name them. And then the person leaves, new CEO comes in, spends the next 3 years putting them back together. So basically, the organization has wasted 6 years basically doing organizational work, which didn't make any steps forward. There is a fine balance in between knowing to keep a course, of course, being open to, let's say, shift here and there. But if you change strategies, change organizations, change structures too often, there's no way an organization, you know, Hempel is 6,000 people, there's organizations that are 60,000, 100,000. It takes years to penetrate the different levels. And I see that linked a little bit to what you said with the short-term thinking. If you're just trying to whatever ride the wave without fundamentally looking after the basis and roots of your business, ultimately you're going to end up in some sort of a trouble. So let me just pause and see if you have any thoughts that triggered as well.
Yeah, and I actually think I've been on a personal learning journey there because I've also myself been trigger happy in terms of driving transformation, drive new ideas, and, you know, wanting to reinvent way too often. I think it is a very important lesson learned that whenever you do that, there's an associated cost to it because you slow down your organization, you defocus, and it takes time learning a new set of skills or having a new focus in the business. So where I am today in my own personal journey is to be far more, you could say, focused on really what is our core abilities, our core competences, and saying, if we have well-defined, this is our core competences, this is our core attributes in front of our customers, then we double down on that and we continue to perfect that. There's far higher value in that than trying to dive into new adjacencies and look for new shiny objects that may or may not be relevant to you as a business, let alone to your customers. So I think the way I'm driving Himble today is far more on, let's be really, really good at our core business. You know, if it's about kind of anti-corrosion, you know, protecting steel from corroding and thereby extending its lifetime and thereby reducing CO2 emission generally, then that's what we do. And we do it really, really well. Then let's not get distracted by all kinds of new things and you know, new opportunities that may not support the core. But it requires one thing that sounds simple, but that's actually quite difficult. That is truly understand what is your core business, what is your core competences, and where is it that you have a uniqueness seen through the eyes of your customers, not seen through the eyes of your colleagues or yourself, but that customer perceived uniqueness, that is your core competence, and that's where you double down, and then you're consistent and insisting on developing, refining, perfecting that. And that's harder than it sounds, because we all get excited about new technologies, new opportunities, and you know, new adjacencies. But controlling that and just really staying focused on your core competences is tremendously valuable.
On the topic, the last topic of our chat together, with a lens of people this time around and talent, specifically when you hire and you recruit, hard skills are obviously important, and then depends, right? If you're hiring a finance versus a head of manufacturing versus a head of digital, there's different hard skills there. But what are some of the soft skills? Maybe it's not the right word. Yeah. What are some of those, you know, elements of values almost, or core skills that you're looking for in people that you want to hire?
I do want to start by the hard skills, because I don't think you can neglect it. The complexity of global business today is such that deep functional skills, whether it's finance, R&D, supply chain, sales, is a prerequisite. But I also look upon it as an order qualifier. That is what will get you to the table. That is what it will get you to an invitation to a chat. So when we look beyond that, then to my mind, it's really about people who can collaborate, people who can drive change, not for their own self-interest, but who can selflessly drive change, who can drive followership selflessly. And selfless leadership is, in my opinion, a little bit underrated. We have got way too many people around the world, also here in Himble, who have got their own self-interest as the primary priority. But the value that you unleash, if you say, I work in service of, or I work to enable the success of my colleagues or of my team, is tremendous. And your ability to create followership becomes exponential if they can see that you lead from behind, you set a clear direction, and then you allow them to really unleash their full potential. So selfless leadership is an important element in what I look at. I also look for what I normally call moral integrity, because in a world where the temptations are many, then it's incredibly important that we have lighthouse leaders with a high degree of moral integrity, making the right decisions, also under pressure, always having that clear North Star that says, you know, staying within the boundaries, sanctions of legislations, compliance, and always comes before the business, you could say P&L. So moral integrity, selfless leadership are two elements that I think are important that complements the functional skills and create a really powerful leadership.
I like it. Now, here's the $1 million question, Michael. How can you tell So specifically on selfless leadership, because moral compass, okay, you can also do ref checks. There's a good, I mean, there are some very clear elements that if they've done well, you can check informally, especially that works quite well. But for selflessness, of course, also ref checks works. But you know, interview process, are there certain cues? And I'm not, you know, obviously, whoever now listens to our interview will come prepared to your to your future interviews. But I'm also just curious, what are some of the cues that you take to derive that conclusion? Okay, this person is indeed one that displays that.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And I think it's one of the most difficult things of any job, any leadership that's hiring, because you have a very limited amount of information to really make that assessment. So it is difficult. And sometimes we get it right, and for sure, sometimes we get it wrong. But just staying on the reference checks, having reference checks from people who have previously reported to that person, I think is an important dimension. At times, we have a tendency of talking to a leader, someone who has led that person in the past. That's one dimension, but it's equally important to talk to the team members who have reported to that person. So that's on reference checks, really being 360 about that. The other thing is testing for what I call self-awareness. Really, how self-aware is the candidate in terms of how they, what kind of brand do they have in the organization? How do they position themselves? How do they communicate? How do they overall talk about their teams? How do they talk about themselves as leaders and so on? So I don't think I have one magic question to ask, but I try to have a broad perspective on leadership and trying to really get into the level of self-insight the candidate has. Because if I'm generalizing, I would say that many, many candidates are low on self-insight. They have a perception about who they are, but that's seen through their own lens. I would much rather hear, if your colleague were to describe you, Raru, what would they be saying about you? People are often weak on truly understanding how they're being perceived in the organization. So really trying to dive into the self-insight, the self-awareness, it tells me something about that humbleness that the leaders, they go into the task with. And in doing so, are also more likely to be selfless leaders.
Final question, Michael. If you were to give some pieces of advice, can be one, two, three, to your younger self, to somebody that maybe now graduates and embarks on a corporate career and maybe one day wants to be CEO, what would that be? What helped you the most?
Yeah, maybe something that I wish I had been better at, being patient, right? Being super ambitious, but also be patient. You know, if you are a stellar performer, things will come to you. And so, but at least at times I've been way too impatient and, you know, wanting to move on and do new things. And so often within not changing job, because I've only changed kind of company once, but within the company, right? As opposed to really focus on delivering the required output, right? Being the one that raises the hand and say, I've got it, you know, that's always well received by the leaders, you know, that you take responsibility, but also deliver. And it sounds overly simplified, but I think in general, way too many people are jumping around and has never delivered anything because they've never been there sufficiently long to truly see the impact of their decisions. Then they've moved on to a new department or to a new assignment or whatever and so on. But really have the stamina to initiate things, see them through, deliver upon them to a down cycle, to an up cycle, and all of that. So that level of patience, I think, is important because the outputs of your job or the work you've been doing is what will give you the next opportunity.
And the point that you mentioned with the upside and up cycle and down cycle, especially with the times that we are living now, that it's a down cycle and some of us have not really seen that before. It just works if you stay long enough and love the advice, because indeed there's quite a few people that are itchy, myself included. I mean, I recently saw a nice joke where You know, there were a couple of people around, and then one of them says, yeah, patience is a virtue. And then one other says, I don't have time for virtues. we need to make time. So on that note, patience is a good reminder for myself as well. Michael, thanks for joining us. Great conversation. And thanks for all the great examples that you've shared with us and our audience.
Thanks for having me, Rado.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.